Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, let's speak to Darren Ritson. Hello, Darren.
Hello there.
Now, where do we start? What an interesting man you are. You've got several books out, but this particular one I want to talk to you about is Supernatural North.
Yes.
Tell us all about it. What made you do it?
Well, the Supernatural North was actually a second book. A book I wrote before that was called In Search of Ghosts, and that was mainly about me travels around the UK in search of ghosts, visiting haunted sites and things, you know. And I was going to do a follow-up to it, and it was meant to be all around the UK again. Mm-hmm. But what I decided to do, as I was sort of collating information and getting stories, obviously I began at the north of England, and I was going to work my way down and, you know, cover the whole of England. I found myself just getting more and more fantastic stories and finding out loads more brand new super things about the north of England and itself. And I thought to myself, well, there may just be a possibility that I could do a full volume on just the north of England itself. And I think that's how it really came about. So, but that's really about the size of it, really.
Darren, who is Darren Ritson? Tell me a bit of your history. Tell me why you're interested in ghosts.
Right, well, a little bit about myself. And I was born in 1972 in Newcastle upon Tyne, and from an early age, growing up in a house in St Anthony's in the Walker area of Newcastle, I experienced a few what I would call odd experiences, you know. One night I woke up and I thought I saw a boy standing in the doorway of my room. There was other times where I woke up and there was something blowing me forehead, you know. And I was always interested in spooky stuff because of that, you see. And by the age of 13, on a school trip to France, I experienced what I consider to be my first incident in regards to poltergeist activity when a bedside cabinet had moved into the middle of the floor to cover up this orange juice stain which we'd spilled, was rocking by itself. I woke up in the middle of the night and this thing was rocking by itself, you see. And when I kicked my legs over the side of the bed and rubbed my eyes to have a closer look, it just took off, and all my keys and my French francs that I'd been using to spend just went all over the place, you know, and I was sort of terrified. So basically, the interest stemmed from those sort of experiences I had. Moving it on in life, I used to teach a judo club in the Baker area of Newcastle. I'd been doing judo for about 25 years of my life. And we moved the judo club into this old community hall, which had been around since the early 1900s. And I was subsequently told again there that they thought they had a ghost. And eventually I thought to myself, well, you know, I've had all these experiences. It would be nice to maybe experience more and do a little bit of delving into the world of the paranormal to see what I could come up with. And I carried out my first overnight investigation there was in the early 2003. And that would have been after, the vast majority of my young life collecting books and magazines and all about the paranormal and trying to familiarise myself with theories and ideas and things like that.
Darren, let me stop you there and let's go back to your youth. How did your schoolmates cope with the fact that you must have spoke to them, or did you keep it a secret?
No, I mean, is it when I were talking about the France incident here? Because there was six people in the dormitory with me that night, and they experienced it too. I was the only one who seen the cabinet rocking and move, but when it came crashing down to the floor and when it threw across the room, obviously it woke everybody up. And there was a few people, you know, they all woke up with a start. Bloody, what the heck was that, you know? Mm-hmm. And we were all terrified. And since we were all kids at the time, we were crying out of fear, you know? But at school as well, when I started telling people I was into the paranormal and stuff, I got the reaction that I sometimes still get today, and that's you're a crackpot.
What did your family think?
My family are very supportive, actually. My mother, she's never had a paranormal experience in her life, and she's intrigued by, but she's never experienced anything. My father, on the other hand, he had a few spooky experiences back in his early days as well, and he used to tell me ghost stories about what happened to him and what he saw over the years. And I suppose, in a way, that is another reason why I'm interested as well, because, like, my father used to tell us these spooky stories, which used to fascinate me, really, you know. But my family are quite supportive. Like, they're great.
Darren, what do you believe? And we're going to talk about this incredible case with the podcast. We'll leave that for a minute. But
right.
What do you believe is happening out there? Do you think there are many thousands of ghosts? Do you spirits or what? Tell me your thoughts.
I believe that there is something occurring out there. I believe something's occurring which can be described as paranormal. I believe there are apparitions. I believe they are poltergeists. But explaining what they actually are is the difference, is a different matter entirely. There's a million and one explanations for a million and one different ghosts and why they're there. And, you know, some people have got theories that they've come back to haunt them for whatever reason, you know. The fact of the matter is that these things are there. I think if people were to join societies like the Society for Psychical Research or the Ghost Club of Great Britain and actually do some research into the files that go back hundreds of years, I think there's enough evidence in there, bona fide evidence, to suggest or to prove the reality of the apparition and yeah. poltergeist and things like that. But again, it's explaining what it is. Mm.
Darren,
it's the problem, yep.
Years ago you would have been burnt at the stake.
Indeed,
why do you think that we are now changing our views and more people seem to be really interested and wanting to find out?
Well, I think there's a lot of television programmes at the minute, which have been running for a few years, which have highlighted paranormal activity, programmes that you see on Sky Television and things. I mean, there's hundreds of documentaries and things I know. And I think everybody, for some reason, they've took a massive interest in, and there's just hundreds and hundreds of paranormal groups and things out there, which is a great thing, if I've got to be honest. But it also has its sort of its drawbacks as well, I think, as well. But I think, in reality, the fact that these programmes have been on, and, you know, there's been some really good programmes, I think people have been watching them and they've thought to themselves, you know, well, I fancy a bit of this, you know.
Do you think there's many phonies out there, Darren?
Yes. Good Lord, yes. But who am I to say that? At the end of the day, everyone's entitled to go out there and explore the paranormal, should they wish. Don't get us wrong, I'm not saying there's not a place in the paranormal for anybody. But unfortunately, like everything in life, you get your Mickey takers and you'll get your phony investigators, you'll get people who are just in it for their own personal gain, you'll get people who are in it for money. We've got to be careful what I say. There's a lot of mediums out there, really.
Speak your mind.
I think there's a lot of mediums out there who the skills have got a lot to be desired. It's just a sad sort of aspect of life, to be honest. I think if it wasn't paranormal, there'd be, I think it would just be something else. Yep.
I'm talking to Darren Ritson, who's got a book out called Supernatural North. He also had an incredible experience, which we're going to talk about shortly, with the poltergeist. But with the book, where the hell do you start putting a book like this together? Where do you start about it being supernatural? Because there are so many hauntings in the north of England. Where do you start?
Well, I decided to start at the places where I actually personally visited myself. I tried not to include, if I could help it, I didn't want to include places that I hadn't actually been to and visited myself, because it was supposed to be like a diary of where I've been and what I've done and who I've spoke to and who I've interviewed and what experiences I've had over the years doing that and that. But I think there's a few places that have like sort of found its way into these pages where I haven't been. But they got in because the stories that these places had were so fantastic, you know, so alluring. I thought, well, you know, they've got to go into the Supernatural North book to make it complete, you know.
Darren, which is the scariest? Where's the one that you were very uncomfortable in?
Oh, my Lord. There's been a few places, to be honest. There's a mention of a place in Sunderland called Duxford House, where I had a very, very frightening experience. It's an old, deserted house. The guy who owned the house actually lived next door in the Silkswath area of Sunderland, and his house was just going to rack and ruin. Although it was still all in one piece, and it was fine to walk around, and nobody actually lived in it. And according to the guy who lived there was a bit of history involved in the house, and there was a guy who once lived there who was related to some big shipping giant up in the northeast of England. And he actually lived there. General Beckwith, his name was. And his ghost was supposed to haunt the stairwell in there. And there's been a few times where this guy had been in the house with his dogs, and he was having a look around. And he had some experiences. He'd heard voices and noises coming from upstairs, and to the point where he wouldn't want to go into his house, into this neighbouring house of his. So we eventually found out about it through a friend of mine called Drew Bartley and Fiona Vipond. And we managed to get in, and he gave access to the building. We investigated the place on a number of occasions. And on one occasion, on the top level of the building, I was up there recording with a digital dictaphone, like an EVP machine, trying to pick up EVP recordings and see what we could get on the video. And the strangest thing occurred, it was as I was walking down this dark corridor and I was calling out, I was saying, if there's anyone here, please give us a sign. I heard these footsteps come towards us. And it all happened within like a split second. As the footsteps came towards us, I felt this like electrical discharge going all around my head and my face. And I heard this hissing noise. Also at the same time, I felt this, it's hard to put into words, I felt this something go inside. If you know what I mean? As if something walked through it. Mm-hmm. Through, if I say something walked through me. If anyone's listening, they'll not know what through is means. But I felt this, whatever it was, I can only describe it as, it felt like, and I'm not saying it is, it felt like something passed through me, yeah? Yeah. And it was just terrifying, to be honest. It was absolutely terrifying. I've always said, you know, again, with a lot of people doing the paranormal investigations, a lot of people think it's a laugh. They go out and have a bit of a giggle, and, oh, that was a great night. Whoa, brilliant. When's the next one? And I think that's the wrong attitude to take as well, because I think you've got to respect this. Because at the end of the day, we really don't know what it is we're dealing with. And I've always said that most paranormal investigators out there will have an experience which they will consider to be so frightening, they might throw the towel in and think, no more. And I think that came close with me. I know it was, on a scientific level, it's rather subjective, but on a personal level to me, it scared me witless. Yeah. And I thought to myself, something occurred there. I heard the footsteps, I heard the static, and I felt something. You know, I felt ice cold as what I can only describe as this thing walking through me. And that was one of the more frightening experiences I've had, and it nearly made us throw in the towel, to be honest. But I didn't.
Darren, yeah. I was told that a significant case that you were involved with, the poltergeist, was one of the most documented in the last 50 years. What's this about?
Yes, the last 50 years. Well, that's a quote from Alan Murdy. He's the head of the Spontaneous Cases Committee for the Society for Psychical Research in London. And he carried out an investigation into the case. And he come up, he reviewed the evidence, and he's obviously read the book. The book was reviewed in the Society's journal. And he, on behalf of the Society for Psychical Research's Spontaneous Cases Committee, he's labelled the case as one of the most significant poltergeist cases in the last 50 years. And I think, yeah, that could be well on the mark, to be honest, because that was a horrendous case, to be honest, to have to deal with. It went on for almost 12 months back from the start of late 2005 almost to the end of 2006, and that happened in South Shields in Tenonweir, and obviously it's become known as the South Shields poltergeist.
What happened?
What didn't happen, to be honest. It started off with the basic stuff, things being moved around, just ever so subtle. subtly, you know, there was like a tap being left on or a door being left open. And for the first few months of this thing developing, the couple, the family in the household were like blaming each other. I was saying, did you leave the door open? Did you leave the tap on? And you know when you scratch it and you're like, oh yeah, I must have done. And they never thought anything of it for a while. And things persisted. And eventually they started to get a little bit more severe. For example, there was a rocking horse which they had in the house which belonged to the child. And they found it at the top of the stairs. And then they moved it out the way. And when they came back upstairs, they found it was hanging from the loft. So what they've done is they actually put it outside, thinking, well, if it's outside, you know, there's nothing, it can't interfere with it. And they went to bed, they woke up the next morning, came downstairs, and the rocking horse was back in the house. So by this time, the family was starting to get a little bit concerned. And basically, there's a woman I used to work with called Leslie, who approached me one day, and she said, listen, my friend's daughter's got a ghost. And obviously we corresponded, and it went from there. This is when I found out about all the stuff that had happened earlier on. And I kept in touch with this family for a month or two, and basically offering what support I could. And I was just saying, if you can keep a diary, that'll be great. Let me know what goes on, when it happens, who's there to see it. Document everything. Try not to be frightened. If you can, embrace it. Become the investigator as opposed to the victim. If you want things to happen, the likelihood is the blooming well won't. So this is the advice I tried to give her, and she done really well, this lady. And eventually, though, she just snapped, and I got a phone call, and it was like, look, you're going to have to come in. Will you come in and have a look? So I agreed to go in, and then I phoned a colleague of mine, Mike Hallowell, who's a fellow investigator here in the northeast of England. And I says, look, I might have this poltergeist case. In all honesty, I said to him, I said, if this is true, then it could be a live poltergeist case that we've got here. But in all honesty, it just sounds too good to be true. Anyway, we went down. We arranged a day to go down. And on one hot summer's day, it was June 2006, we made our entrance into this house in Lock Street, which is a pseudonym for the real street. And we experienced some of the most bewildering stuff you'd ever likely to see, to be honest. And that was when it first started. And from that point on, it just got progressively worse and worse. But we were lucky in one respect. When you go to poltergeist cases or haunted houses and things, it's very rare that you'll get things happening quite often all the time. But this poltergeist seemed to want to just play. It wanted to just show with stuff, and it did, you know. I mean, there was toys being thrown around, doors being opened and closed and slammed when we were there. And we were lucky enough to get a lot of the phenomena recorded onto videotape. And it's quite harrowing stuff, to be honest.
How can people see that?
Well, that's the thing. For the last few years, we've been negotiating with a TV company to try and get a documentary made on it. There's been a lot of interest shown. But unfortunately, due to whatever reason, they've ended up pulling out for... Well, I'll tell you exactly why, because eventually they wanted to know who the family were. And from the outset, we promised that we would never give up their name.
Yeah.
And to this day, we still haven't, and we won't. In fact, there was one TV company that turned around and said, look, we'll go down there and we'll offer them a suitcase full of money. And we turned around and said, well, no, you won't, because A, we're not going to tell you who they are, and B, they don't want the money. Mm. They just want to live their lives. They just want to get on with it and forget this thing ever existed.
Is it still happening with it?
No, not as far as I know. Not long after the case ended, we stopped visiting the house and that, and from what I can gather, there's been nothing more. Mm-hmm. I think with poltergeist cases as well, usually a true poltergeist case can be short-lived, from anything from 6 weeks to a few months, and a lot of the time they're so mild, I think they can be over with by the time you even realise something's going on, because obviously like there's different sort of levels in intensity. We were lucky, or unlucky, as whichever way you want to put it. We were lucky enough to get a case that had intensity, but it also had duration as well. Mm. Now, I think the Enfield case in 1977, which was investigated by Guyline Playfair and Morris Gross, their case went on for like a year and a half, and ours was obviously like round about the 12 months. So I think in Poltergeist terms, it went on for quite a long time.
Yeah.
For us, it seemed to, I mean, for the family in question, it must have seemed like a lifetime for them. So yeah, it was an absolutely fascinating case. But like I say, I mean, there's a lot of people who've slated the case, and there's a lot of people who've basically said nasty things about it, but which is okay. They're entitled to their opinion, I suppose.
I think in that industry that you're in, you're going to get criticised all the time because people will believe what they want to believe, and
well, that's
there'll
it.
Be the doubters, always will be. Darren, you're a fascinating man with a lot of books out. How do people find you?
Well, you can go. Oh, well, we did have a website, but it's temporarily closed down. We did. You can. Well, in regards to books, you can find me books on Amazon or Waterstones. If you type in Darren W. Ritson, you'll find them. I've got a Facebook page. You can find us on there if anyone wants to get on there and message us. But I think that's really about it, really. I mean, the website will be resurrected soon, and that'll be, it's called Wraithscape. It's temporarily sort of out of service at the moment. We're like updating and doing new things to it and that.
So to find your books, Amazon?
Amazon.com or Waterstones or in all good bookshops, yeah, anything like that. I think all in all, I've got about 10 to 12 books which have been released so far. And there's another half a dozen in the pipeline, which have been contracted and which are like on their way. So look out for them.
Darren Ritson, you're a fascinating man. Thank you for
talking. Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Liverpool's biggest after hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.